Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. This week on our second helping, we are so excited because we have a fabulous guest for you. Bits, are you excited?
I'm too excited, Nancy.
So this is our first second helping after of our season 10 rewatch, and we are absolutely blessed because we have perhaps the heaviest hitter in the Top Chef cinematic universe on the pod with us. So before we introduce exactly who they are, I'm going to give you a little background and see if you can guess. So this week, our guest is an acclaimed chef and restaurateur in Los Angeles, the owner of Playa Provisions, a multifaceted dining destination. She is a celebrated TV chef, the first winner of Tournament of Champions, a culinary titan on Bobby Flay's Triple Threat, and on Beat Bobby Flay as a contestant. She is has been a judge on Chopped, Guy's Grocery Games. She was the runner-up of Top Chef Season 10 and the undisputed winner of Top Chef Season 14. Most importantly, she is the author of the new cookbook, Sunkissed Cooking. Today on the pod, we have Brooke Williamson. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Hello, hello, hello.
Wow. Okay, Brooke, we're going to keep it in check because we have a lot to cover with you. So we're going to chill on the fangirl. But
I mean, no, go on.
Just know that we're itching in our seats right now. Yes. We're so happy to have you.
But okay, we have a lot of ground to cover, most notably the new cookbook that came out this November. But the first question we have is like, are you tired? Like, that is a long list of accolades. Like, where do you find the time to just like chill and recenter? Like, where's your energy level at right now?
Today, where's my... Sorry, my dogs are barking. Apologies.
We love dogs. It's okay.
Their energy level is high.
So high. Their energy level is high. I will say... Can I talk? Nope. Sorry, somebody just had to finish walking by the front door. My energy level today it's not so high. I don't know that that has anything to do with all of the things that you guys just talked about. Today I'm just tired, and I have those days, but I will say that, it's been a lot the last, 12 years. And, it's been excessively a lot for the last couple of months promoting this book. About to go into a busy shoot season. So, I don't estimate that it's going to slow down anytime soon. So my energy level is here regardless.
Well, we are grateful for all that you expend so that we can enjoy all that you create, because your career, both publicly and at your restaurants, is such a gift. And we have so many questions. But as Bit said, we want to start by talking about your new cookbook, Sunkissed Cooking. And I guess what we want to know, or you know what? Sorry, let me restate that. What we really want to start is talking about just the beginning of your career. We'll quickly cover on that and just get a sense of how you got to where you are today. Okay. So the biggest thing we want to know is, we know that you were really young when you started cooking. Mm-hmm. And we know that you decided very early on that you wanted to be a chef. I guess our question is, what was it like being so young and having so much conviction around what you wanted to be when you grew up? Because at that time, your peers were going to college, figuring mm-hmm. things out, and you felt it. You knew.
Yeah. I mean, I will say in retrospect, I feel very fortunate that I knew what I wanted to do from a very young age. I think that, yeah, it wasn't normal for a, you know, say, 12-year-old to say, I'm going to own a restaurant one day and become a chef, especially when I was 12. I feel fortunate. At the time, it was like, you know, it gave me a path. It gave me the motivation to just sort of get it done and do what I had to do. And, I felt very fortunate to have that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my parents expected me to go to college. I definitely felt the pressure to go to college, even though I didn't really want to. I wanted to go to culinary school, and but I felt like I owed it to my parents to try college. I actually went for a year and then came back and started working, and that's kind of where my career really sort of professionally began.
And when you look back on the Brooke, you know, that starting out for the first time in that professional kitchen, What do you think would surprise you at that point most about where you are today?
About where I am today? Nothing really. I mean, I knew that hard work paid off. I knew that once I found something that I was really excited about, that I had the capability to accomplish it. But I will say, cooking was the only thing that I ever really had that with. Yeah. As a young girl, I had lots of things that I was excited about and then wasn't. I was never really into school. I found reasons once a week to come home early or had a stomach ache and not stay home. I wanted to be the first professional baseball player, the first female professional baseball player. And that didn't really pan out. I wanted to be an ice skater in the Olympics, but I didn't really like jumps. So there were lots of things I really like was passionate and excited about, but cooking was the only thing that I actually had the work ethic for. And that never wavered. That was, you know, once I started working in a professional kitchen, I was like, give me a 12, 14 hour day. I'm excited. I feel like I've accomplished something at the end of the day. There's no chance I'm not going to show up to work tomorrow. There's no chance I'm going to be late to work tomorrow. You know, I always had that. So I knew that that is sort of why I excelled so quickly, was because of I was willing to put in the work.
Yeah, locked in. That's badass. Honestly, like 10 out of 10 answer, because like you asked that question,
that
you're
is
like
inspiring.
I never expected to be where I was, and you're like, fuck that. Like, I knew I was gonna be here. I love it. That's awesome.
Well, I knew it was possible, but I just knew it wasn't gonna be easy. And yeah, so, but I was willing to put in that work.
Mad respect.
I love that. Well, so, you know, as you said, the last 12 years have been pretty busy and you've been putting in a ton of work. So I guess,
I mean,
you
know, the last 30 years have been really busy.
Let's be clear. Yes. But so, you know, you've had already an incredible career. Why this point in your career to write a cookbook, and what brought you to this point right now?
Well, it was not the first time I tried. You know, people are surprised that it took me this long to come out with a cookbook. It was not for lack of attempts. Mm-hmm. There were two proposals written that didn't sell. You know, reflecting on that, there were reasons why they didn't sell, and I'm glad they didn't, because I feel like the one proposal that did sell sold because it was great and people want to read it. So, you know, I'm excited that my first cookbook is something that I am thrilled with. And I didn't just put out because I felt like I should write a book. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited about it. And you know what? Sure, it took me a long time to write a book, but now I've done it. And it gave me a feeling of accomplishment that I've never had in any other area of my life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as someone who's known for thinking on their toes and improvising as like an absolute strong suit, especially in front of a camera, which is like an added dimension of stress, a cookbook feels like a totally different energy. Like, did you bring any of that competitive cooking experience? Did it have any influence on the way that you approached this book or wrote this book?
No, it's a completely different thing. Just like cooking in a restaurant is a completely different thing than cooking on TV is a completely different thing than judging on TV, which is a completely different thing from being an author of a cookbook. It's like, you know, I feel like it was a totally different job. As a chef, I think most chefs will tell you, as creative people, the last thing we want to do is sit down and write recipes. So that was a hurdle that I had to get through, and it was a lot of work, and it was a lot of work that felt very tedious to me. But it was exciting at the same time. So, and there were deadlines, and there were, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I really knew nothing about. And now I feel like I'm well-versed in a completely different area of my profession. So it's cool to have that.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, like, you've been a public personality now for so long. It must be a really interesting way to think of like, okay, now as a published on paper chef, how does that feed into my brand or my identity?
I mean, it's huge. It's, you know, you ask anyone who writes cookbooks, you don't write them to make money. You don't. I mean, you don't. It's not a big moneymaker. You write it because you feel like it's something that you want to put out there. You want to sort of feed to the world a different version of yourself, a different creative outlet. And you know, it was as much as I hate this term, it was a passion project, I guess. Mm-hmm. Knowing that it wasn't going out there to make money, right? It was going out there because it was something that I really wanted to do.
And so on that note, actually, something that Bits and I were really wondering about, thinking about, you know, like the Martha Stewart documentary just came out and her cookbooks are so iconic. And I guess our question to you, and as you were writing it and your thesis of the cookbook, what role do you think that cookbooks play in defining the legacy of a chef?
They last forever, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason why I'm actually very pleased that my first two proposals didn't sell, because this is something I could 100% stand behind and be proud of leaving as, I guess, a quote-unquote legacy. It's something that, you know, it's also a lot of pressure in the sense that these words that are written, I mean, I spent a lot of time on my intro. It's like 8 pages. I don't expect everyone who's buying my book to know who I am. And I really felt like it was important to explain who I was and why I got to where I am today. And, you know, if you've never heard of me, here's my story. And this explains every part of me. And I think that's important when you're reviewing a collection of recipes to see, like, you know, what they say about somebody. So, you know, but writing an intro that is heartfelt and comes from a place of like some vulnerability and some personal stuff. Getting those words down on paper and feeling okay about them lasting forever, was a lot of pressure. And I think that is one of my proudest accomplishments of this book is writing that intro and having it feel very truly, authentically me.
That's amazing. And it seems like maybe even for the first go or the second go at, you know, on the previous attempts of a cookbook, maybe that just wouldn't have landed for you like it does right now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you think about somebody, you know, Nancy and I are going to put these cookbooks on our shelves, we're going to crack them open, what's the feeling that you want people to take away when they make a recipe in this book?
I want people, honestly, to be inspired to use these recipes as jumping off points, mm-hmm. or inspiring in a way that makes people think for themselves and create for themselves. I like to say these recipes are suggestions. The way that I read cookbooks, generally I don't read through full recipes. I look at pictures and take elements of other people's dishes and sort of put my own twist on them. And I think these recipes are straightforward and they're simple enough for anybody to make, but they're also potentially innovative in a way that make you think of certain ingredients differently, or how to, you know, how to conceptualize a dish differently than you're used to, or how to present like a bunch of vegetable focused dishes and not feel like you're missing out on anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that from personal experience, like I'm extremely type A. So when I'm cooking out of a cookbook, I actually love to just like, you know, let go and let God, for lack of a better expression, to just say like, cool, okay, one cup. Like it's a completely just like flow state activity to just like mm-hmm. open that. And so, but I also love the idea of just like giving myself permission to just say, okay, this is like the starting point. Take this where you yeah. will. Take whatever is in your, you know, pantry, et cetera. So yeah, absolutely love that.
And if you don't like an ingredient, if there's an ingredient in one of these recipes that doesn't speak to you and that's the reason why you're not making the recipe, swap it out for something else. You know, yeah. you don't like apples, like substitute for another fruit. You know, I just think that you shouldn't feel so like confined within a recipe. And I think that is something that I really would love to stress when people are cooking from this book. Don't not make something because you don't like one ingredient. Take it out or substitute it for something that sounds great to you. Make yourself happy.
I love that, especially because I cracked this open. I saw that you had an acorn squash recipe. And I've had 3 acorn squash that I got in a CSA box like 2 months ago that have been sitting on my
island.
Last
forever.
And like, they last forever. And and I'm like, someday I'm going to have the time to peel these things. But I don't have to peel them for this.
No, so
I'm going
to
make them this weekend.
I made that dish on Good Day LA this morning. And
oh,
I,
my
like,
God, put, crazy.
Yeah, and I put the platter of squash out, and I, like, dressed it with the pumpkin seed vinaigrette, and I looked at it, and I was like, this is a delicious dish. And I made it 100 times, and it looks
still
delicious,
good.
And it's, like, room temperature, and it was made yesterday, and I'm just putting it out for show, and I still kind of want to eat it. So I feel like that says a lot.
Love it. Love it.
I love that. And it's also, I mean, if I may connect some dots, what's really interesting to me about you, and I feel like your training both as a professional chef and then on TV, like exactly what you're saying, if you don't like something about this recipe, change it. I feel like that's very in tune with what we see of you on TV, of just like, go with the flow, improvise, figure it out. This, you're not too like set in stone, which I think has helped you in your competition, your competitive career.
Well, you can't be like, you can't.
I can't compete. I don't have blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's only so high maintenance. Yeah. I have the ability to be.
I really do. Just a quick aside. I really did love like your extremely visceral reaction to getting the chicken breast in the cooking. Oh my God. I'm totally blanking. But totally.
Was it in Nancy, Tournament of Champions?
Yes.
Tournament of Champions.
Yes.
Against Michael. Was it Michael?
Yeah. Yes.
You're just like, oh.
Oh my God.
I'm a high consumer of boneless, skinless chicken breast in this household.
That you are. That you are.
I mean, if you're going to fry it, great.
I love a cutlet. I really do.
I love a cutlet.
Cutlets are
supreme.
Dredge it
in flour or breadcrumbs and fry that thing. It's delicious.
Oh my God.
Mm-mm-mm. Anyway, I think that's actually a great segue now. So we do know you initially from Top Chef. Mm-hmm. And so if you'll indulge us, we'd love to talk a little bit about that part of your career, knowing full well that you have moved on to greater and more incredible, you know, adventures
Different.
Since then.
Different.
But we just really want, you know, to ruminate on that part of your career for a second.
Okay.
And so Bits and I, as you know, are rewatching season 10. And Bits has very strong feelings about how good season 10
very
is.
Very strong. Very strong. I mean, I'm not saying this. Season 10 was, I think, one of the best, one of the most rewatchable. There's like an alchemy that happens on Top Chef that is just like you can't replicate it in
some
any other
circumstances. Some seasons have it, some seasons don't.
Either got it or you don't, kid. That's showbiz.
I mean, season 10 was my second favorite season.
Yes, okay. Yes, we must
caveat
that we understand that you're winning season 14, which we will get to and we will talk about briefly.
But wow. You know, I think one of the things that was crazy, there's so many firsts about that season, like the way that it kicked off. You've got like 4 different chefs. You have to compete 4 different, you know, prepare 4 different dishes. Like, I had to ask, like, do you ever think back on that about how just poetic it was that it was like an excellent, incredible salad that just like kicked off your Top Chef journey?
I mean, I had visions of it being like a live alligator. So the fact that they were like, make the best, it was Hugh Atchison, and he was like, make the best salad of your life. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? and like, there were several people in that kitchen in the room who were like, I don't know what to do. And I was like, dude, it's a salad. Make a great vinaigrette. You can make anything taste good.
Yes.
Wait, we have a question about that salad. Is that the salad that's on the cover of your cookbook?
No.
It looks like a kale salad.
It's a kale salad.
There's only one way to make a kale salad.
But that salad, I mean, it's so funny because it's so 12 years ago. But it had like a beet puree on the bottom of the plate and like shaved yes. beets and like fried kale and fresh kale. I was like, what else can I do to impress in this salad? Whereas like in my real life, I'm like, make a great vinaigrette. It'll taste great, you know? But I mean, I was like.
And you had like 45 minutes. Were you, if I had 45 minutes to make a salad, I'd be like, fuck. Like, is it supposed to take that long? Yeah. Like, do you want a chicken cutlet?
Is this a trick? Like.
Oh my God. Yeah. So that just like made me laugh, especially like after like flipping through like, you know, vegetables front and center and like vegetables, man, front and center. Yeah. Incredible. So, but let's back up. Season 10. I think the thing Nancy and I talk about a lot on this pod is just how much Top Chef is such a time capsule for like food trends, but also like reality TV trends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Top Chef finds chefs at different points in their career. Where was your head at when you decided to go on the show? Were you thrilled? Were you like, oh my God, this is going to do weird things to my career? Like, what was your, yeah, what was the vibe for you?
Well, you know, I decided to do that show like the fourth season that they asked me to do it. Wow. I think they started asking me around season 5 or 6, like if I was interested, and I would fill out an application every year, and I'd be like, maybe I was just not into it. I was like, I'm not competitive. I hate TV. I have terrible stage fright. I don't feel like I need to compete against other people with food. That like goes against everything that I feel like I've learned in the kitchen. You know, I was terrified of doing terribly and embarrassing myself. Like I also, if you should read the intro to my book, but it was mostly fear-based, mm-hmm. the reasons why I didn't want to do it. And then I got to a point where I'd kind of seen what that show had done for other people's careers, the trajectory that it had sent people on, and, you know, people had bustling restaurants after that. And I finally was like, if I say no again, they're never going to ask me. Mm-hmm. And granted, they didn't offer me the show every year, but I kind of didn't make it past a certain point in the interview process, which is arduous, because they could tell that I wasn't really into it. And they don't want people that are like kind of want to be there. They want people mm-hmm. who are super excited to be there. And that was never me. And then I finally was like, I have a 4.5-year-old son who, you know, has a dad who's very participatory in his life, who can pick up the slack at work, who can, you know, cover me in all areas. I also don't want to demonstrate to him that he should ever give up an opportunity because he's scared of what might happen. So I just decided to do it and jump in, and I was terrified. Absolutely terrified. I had done a couple of like local news segments, but I hated, and I still hate live TV at this point, but I have terrible stage fright. I was really, really scared. And also, you're giving up all control, which is what I'm all about, being in control. I was giving it all up. I was leaving my son for like 6 weeks. I had very little communication with work, with him, with the outside world in general. It was very scary.
Yeah. Yes, we cannot imagine. I mean, if I go 30 seconds without texting Nancy, there's something wrong. She knows to call for help.
Imagine just disappearing off the face of the earth for 5 weeks.
It's unbelievable. That is both fascinating that it was only 5 weeks.
Well, and it was that it 5 weeks and then like weeks. A week of a finale. But yeah, oh my so it was God. 6 weeks.
That's insane. So, okay. You know, season 10, we've now had 21 seasons of Top Chef. It's situated like almost dead center in this sort of like Top Chef cinematic universe. You know, we have covered earlier seasons. We covered season 6. Rewatching those seasons, it's very much like the trend at the time was like very stuffy. It was very like haute cuisine. And then, you know, as we move into the most recent seasons, like season 2021, we see like almost an entire 180 where, you know, we're not just cooking French food. We're not just cooking with like the same technique. We're actually celebrating and expecting regional ethnic diversity, a bend towards sustainability. Looking back at your season, both season 10 and season 14, where do you feel like your season fell along this spectrum of like embracing this sort of like hyper local or just diversity of perspective when it comes to creating and plating, and where maybe Top Chef started out in its early days?
Well, I think each season is very reflective of the moment that mm-hmm. it took place in. And I think, you know, even between season 10 and season 14, things were very different. We had kind of gotten out of the realm of, like, the showy, like, sort of gastronomical, creative, just to be creative world. I think probably by season 10, even, we were in a place where, like, if somebody was using... actually, no, season 10, I think we actually visited, what was it called? The Modernist Cuisine Kitchen. It was kind of like right at the height of that, maybe, but maybe by season 14, we were kind of out of that world of like foams and liquid nitrogen just for the show of it. And, you know, the judges were definitely like, we would rather have food that tastes good than looks interesting. I remember I made the terrible mistake of sous vide-ing a pork tenderloin, and that wasn't to show that I knew how to do that. It was more, again, out of like, I'm scared. I know I can nail the temperature if I just sous vide it, so I'm gonna do that. But then Tom was like, what are you doing? Just cook a pork tenderloin. You're a chef. Like, you know how to nail a temperature. You've done it a million times. Just do it. And I was like, no, I get it. I totally understand. I don't know. I was in my head. And, you know, I guess there's no spoiler alerts because this was like 8 years ago. But like, you know, I got eliminated in that challenge. And I was like, no, you're right. I was cooking out of fear. I know how to do this. And I just didn't have the confidence to display it to you. But I also think, like, if you're talking about, like, hyper-local cuisine, every season really embraces where they are locationally. So I think that that has always been important, and showing the history of the location. You know, Charleston was a really cool place to be, just the history of that city. I feel like I visited every interesting place, I mean, it's not even possible, but like everything, every interesting, beautiful place in Charleston. And like, we went, you know, on a shrimp boat and we cooked at a plantation. There were all of these really informative, cool things that I learned that I never would have learned anywhere else. And in that same moment, we were teaching the rest of the world all of those things. So I think that there's an importance that Top Chef brings to the locale. That's really warranted and really enlightening for so many people.
Yeah. If I may say, like, I think the challenge that really stands out to me that exemplifies everything that you're saying is in Charleston, the pig roast, the low and slow overnight. And I think when you talk about cooking out of fear versus not, this is sheer observation, but like watching your performance between the two seasons, like in Charleston, you almost never see you second guess yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what I'm doing. And you were lucky to be paired with people who like infrequently challenged you on that.
Talking about John Tizar? Because yeah, he was my partner
Dallas.
For the pig roast. It was just a challenge to get through the night. I'm just saying.
How do you do that? Like, there are so every season has one challenge where you're braving the elements. Like, is it just miserable? Is your
like
food
adrenaline
noticeably worse as a result?
No, I mean, I think anyone who's been in this industry long enough has had a sleepless night and gone back to work the next day. I mean, I think age plays a bit into it, and I don't know that I would necessarily feel the same way I did 12 years ago if I had one of those challenges, but I'm pretty productive on no sleep. And I think most of us know how to power through it. We're all pretty tough. You know, there are always a couple of people who are like, oh my God, I can't handle this. I'm so tired. I can't function. I can't think. I can't. My biggest issue was like, I'm not sure if I know how to properly say the things that I need to say, but like, I can break down a pig. No problem. Give me a chainsaw.
Yeah, I can go nonverbal and do this job. You were so cool with the chainsaw. Did you
give me a 60 pound pig and a chainsaw? chainsaw, I'm happy, but like, don't ask me to stand up in front of everybody and tell you what I made.
The heart. You looked so cool with that chainsaw, I have to say. Like, you have this talking head.
I love a power tool.
You're like, I'm just happy there's a power tool here. And then it comes to you like hacking off the head.
I was like, please, can I get the head? Give me the head. I got a lot of backlash on that one.
Oh, whatever. I thought it looked awesome.
Thanks.
It definitely resonated with the viewers at home.
Thanks. But anyways, I think I put on some lipstick for that too.
Pig on a lipstick, or lipstick there on a pig, or something like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, lipstick on me. The pig was headless.
The pig was being roasted all night.
Boom,
baby.
Roasted.
But so, okay, you also are the first person we've spoken to who has had the pleasure of being both a contestant, might I say twice, and a judge on the show. Mm-hmm. And so
I think I've judged, aside from maybe the last two seasons, I've judged every season since I was on.
Yeah, you're such a staple. Damn. And like, it's, I will say, it's like such a warm hug when you show up on the screen. It's like, oh,
thank you.
Brooke totally. Is back. This is going to be a good
We're
one.
In good hands.
The one I remember is the breakfast one where you and Padma are like in pajamas.
Mm-hmm. I love when that
happens. Yeah. Was I? I think everyone else was, but
everyone else. Sorry, all the chefs were in their pajamas. You and Padma looked beautiful.
I can't stand next to Padma in pajamas. Come on, I'm only 5'4". Give me a break.
Unbelievable.
Oh my gosh. Well, anyway, so can you just tell us a little bit about what, when you first judged, and every time since, what does it illuminate about the contestant experience, and what things did you notice or see that you would have never understood being on the other side of the camera?
Judging having been a contestant?
Yeah, like, did it illuminate any parts of like what the judges are looking for that you as a contestant didn't even conceive of because you were so wrapped up in the cooking?
I mean, I think, you know, I've been cooking a really long time. I was cooking a long time before I was cooking for judges, but I feel like you're kind of judged by your customers every single time you put a dish out. Granted, cooking in competition is very different than cooking for regular everyday customers in your restaurant, because you really have to impress in like one or two bites. And because generally they're not eating an entire dish, and you really have to have some major impact in those first few bites for them to want to eat more. But no, I don't think, I mean, I think I'm a better judge having competed because I know sort of what they have to go through to get something mm-hmm. to where it is. But I'm very in tune with the creative process and like, have you conceptualized a dish that you know that you can follow through with? A lot of it is sort of logic. And then, you know, like, did you overreach? Were you looking to impress based on flavor or technique? Were you showing off, or were you just trying to like give us a great representation of what the challenge called for? So I take all of those things into account, but, and yeah, definitely. I think I'm a better judge because I've competed, and I think I'm a better competitor because I've judged, but mm-hmm. I think they go hand in hand.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, at this point you've become like a staple of, I mean, as a chef, as a culinary voice of our generation. But you've talked a bit about, you know, TV personalities being an influence on you when you were young. What type of persona or inspiration are you trying to be to folks that are watching you now?
I just want to be as real and authentic as possible. I want people to be able to relate to the things that I say and understand how I feel, and that, you know, sorry, you mean, say the question again.
Yeah, no. I like to like really, really wander until I arrive at my point. So apologies for that. But no, like, you're a well-known personality. You're an incredible mm-hmm. chef. It's obvious like you have this incredible reach now. You've been on dozens of shows and have, I mean, absolutely dominated. What type of inspiration do you hope to leave folks that want to become a chef or honestly, like, just want to, like, reach higher? Like, what is the impression that you're hoping that you give them when they watch you?
That, I mean, people constantly ask me, like, what my tricks are, you know, for success. And I think that, honestly, there aren't any. I think hard work goes a long way. I think experience is king. Attempting most of the time means failure at some point. But moving past that and prevailing in spite of failure, I think, is the only way to find that success. To not be beaten down by the things that haven't worked and understand that that's just a step in the right direction to finding the things that do work. And that's really hard, I think, in the moment when you're putting your heart and soul into something and you feel like you've failed. But then realizing that, you know, pivoting and finding a different direction was the way it was supposed to happen. You know, I wrote 2 book proposals that didn't sell. I'm so happy they didn't sell because now I have the book that I love. So, you know, I think that that's really important. I tell my son that all the time. He comes home from like a crappy tennis match and he's like, I suck. And maybe I shouldn't be playing. And I was like, what happened to you today made you a better player. And if you are able to sort of let that sink in and wrap your head around that and get back in and work hard, then you're better than you were yesterday. So, I mean, I think that's it. And I think that goes for pretty much anything. That's not culinary, culinary specific.
No, totally.
Well, I would say it definitely registers, like, Bits and I, a lot of the people who watch Top Chef are not chefs. Like, mm-hmm. I think, you know, one in every however many hundred end up, like, Buddha always talks about how he's watched Top Chef since he was a kid. Bits and I are just regular old corporate citizens and
making our chicken breasts at home.
And I think that, to your credit, that message still comes through, even if it's about, like, even the way that you opened this conversation when we said, like, what would your younger self think of? And you're like, she would have believed it.
I'm truly, like, I've truly been shaken by that.
I mean, so, wouldn't have believed that I would have ended up on TV. I would have believed that I got to a point in my career that I expected or wanted to get to because there was no other option. I was never going to do anything else. This was the only thing I was ever going to do. So the rest of it was just trying to figure out how to get there. That's it.
Yeah. I think what I'm saying is it registers as a universal message, not just as people who want to be chefs. Yeah. And I think that that's something that why people like us or viewers are drawn to you because like you're so good at what you do and you say like, if it's cooking that you want to do, you can be great at it. If it's something else, then you can also be great at that. And you can make beautiful vegetable forward meals.
You honestly, like, you may be the origin story of like, let her cook. Like that expression now that the youths are using. Just like, let her cook.
I've never heard that. Oh my God.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
so old
I know. I know. I learned it from like the Gen Z people I work with. I think it's actually
from Breaking Bad. Anyway, our cultural references are all
Or it's a meth reference, but it's one or the other.
Okay,
that applies to everything. So
let him cook. But so closing out this chapter of like, or this conversation topic around cooking TV, I guess what we're so curious about, and what I think a lot of fans are curious about, is just what does it feel like, and what is the experience of being part of this community of like TV greats?
TV greats, but just culinary greats. Yeah. Like, I mean, legends. What's it like to be among and be a part of like legends at this point?
Well, that's a very surreal question. I don't know that it necessarily applies to me, but I will say that having taken this journey to culinary TV that I never expected to land in, took me in a very different direction and took me to a place where I've gotten to experience and see things that I never expected to as a chef. You don't become a chef to travel and see the world and work, work side by side with your, idols. But it has taken me to this place where I've gotten to not only meet some of the most incredible people, some of my closest friends, people who truly inspire me, but it has also taken me to a place where I feel like I'm perpetually learning, which is like the most rewarding thing I could possibly ask for, to feel like I'm in an industry that doesn't stand still, where the opportunities are endless, and that, you know, I can, you know, go from line cook to chef to, you know, have a whole different career on TV to writing a cookbook. It's really just the doors that have opened have been so incredible. And it's really just, it's the most wonderful thing that I feel like I could have possibly gotten out of where I felt like I was meant to be. You know, I feel like I've accomplished all of my major goals in my professional life, which I know not a lot of people can say. And I feel so fortunate about that.
And now you have plenty of time to be an ice skater.
So much time.
You just have to jump. You just have to take that jump.
Just get through the jumps. You'll be fine.
It's all good. No, I'm, it's absolutely
scared of heights. So that's,
I know,
right.
When you were up in the Space Needle, I was... My heart was going out.
Dude, I'm with you. I do not like heights. And it's gotten worse as I've gotten older because, like, I don't know. It's just like you learn, there's just so much more to lose. You're like, wow, my life's kind of sick. Yeah. Like, I would be pretty pissed about something.
I've heard that a lot. And, you know, that's actually a very common thing that I hear, is that, like, people with anxiety around certain things, like, as they get older and they realize how much more they have to lose, it has gotten worse. I will say, if I had to go to the Space Needle today, I probably wouldn't be as freaked out as I was that day on TV. I definitely don't feel like I need to take another helicopter ride, but again, that is another thing that I feel like I got out of doing Top Chef, was understanding that, like, I can survive things that I thought would kill me, and they didn't, and they've made me a stronger person. And now I feel like I don't not do anything because I'm scared.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. Amen to that. Yes. So true. I mean, honestly, talking to you today is like that for us. You're our helicopter, Brooke. We're like, don't be scared.
Don't be scared.
She's just reach a girl. So total pivot as we like wind down this conversation, but obviously like you have a very true north compass for who you are as a chef, the flavors, just the pure essence of just you and your food. But you know, food trends are what they are. Things come and go and stay and stand the test of time. How do you think about like trends when you have something in front of you, like a cookbook, like preserving something in time, does it cross your mind? Like, are there flavors that are, you know, exciting to you now? Like, what was your relationship with like the things that excite you in the moment? As you hold up kind of like what it is that you want to preserve as far as your legacy goes.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I don't really pay attention to food trends. I don't educate myself specifically on things because they're trendy. I educate myself on things that specifically interest me. And if something feels great to me, I have found that it holds up.
Yeah.
There are still dishes that I had on the menu at a restaurant that I was a chef at called Zach's when I was 22 that I still think about. And I'm like, I just read an old menu. And yeah, there are dishes that feel dated, specifically in verbiage. You know, very few people write like nage on a menu anymore, or like essence of, or like, you know, everything felt very like embellished. And now, like, you know, when you write a menu, you kind of just, most people just like write ingredients and like list them. But I will say that a lot of those dishes on that menu that I wrote over 20 years ago, I'm proud of still. So I think that if you're being creative based on inspiration and and are proud of what you're doing and feel like you've created a delicious dish, it's probably still going to feel relevant in 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, maybe the plating of it might feel different, but like I could make a version of most of those dishes from 20 years ago and have and
like,
them.
But even great. Now people love that nostalgia angle. Like, I mean, you go out in New York and it's like, oh, it's the 1990s on a plate. Like, you know, there's like the gelée, like little dots coming around mm-hmm. and everyone's like.
And like a tuna phyllo tower. But no, yeah, you don't like, see that yeah.
very But like, we're having fun. Like, it's a full body experience.
Give me a beet and goat cheese salad and it's probably going to be very satisfying.
I agree.
At the end of the day, those flavors are still delicious.
And yes. they became trendy because they were good. Yes. Right?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
I don't know if anybody's still making that like baked feta pasta anymore, but.
Oh my God.
Was it delicious? I don't know.
That's just like a brick of feta on top of. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
I mean, that one actually hurt my heart watching all the time. It just was like, this can't be it. Society. Like,
this is peak. This is peak humanity.
Peak pandemic cooking. Anyway, mm-hmm. we don't need to get into that. But Brooke, it has been such a pleasure having you with us today. Just hearing you speak is so inspiring and hearing about your journey and everything that you've done. And I know we've talked about the book and we've talked about all the great shows that you're on, but we just want to make sure that you have a chance to say in your own words whatever it is you want our listeners to hear and know about you right now.
Just a blanket statement of what like I think anybody might want to hear about me.
Yes.
Lay it on them.
Anything you want to promote, anything you want to make sure that the people at home are keeping up with. And just whatever you might.
I mean, you know, we talked about the book. I'm really proud of it. I feel like this book, it caters to everyone. It is a vegetable forward book. It is not necessarily a vegetarian book, and it is exciting food. It's not about what is or isn't in it. It's about deliciousness. And go out and get yourself a copy. Read the intro. I spent a lot of hard hours on that. otherwise, you know, I've got a couple of shows that I'm about to jump back into shooting. So, you know, there may or may not be another season of Triple Threat coming. Barbecue Brawl. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe. But keep your eyes open and follow me. And it's all there on my Instagram if you want to see where I am and what I'm doing. But otherwise, I'm so honored that you guys are fans and interested enough to just hear me ramble on. So thank you guys for your time.
Oh, no, thank you.
It's our pleasure.
Incredible. And I'm very excited to do some cooking this weekend. Nancy and I are going to hang out and we're going to
make your bean recipe. Bits is in her bean era.
I'm in my bean era. So,
Mom, give me a shout. Let me know what you think.
I absolutely will. Oh my gosh. Very cool. Well, thank you again, Brooke. And we'll see you on the TV, it sounds like.
Sounds good.
On the TV. And everyone listening at home, we'll see you next week on the pod. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.